Hello and welcome to the Parent Survival Kit Podcast, from surviving to thriving in your household. My name is Gene Schwalen. Next to me, as always, my beautiful bride, Dr. Sonia Schwalen, pediatric expert psychologist and nationally certified school psychologist. And we have a very special guest on the show today. He's a financial expert, longtime friend. He actually handles all of our finances, Jeff Cummins. Thank you for showing up and providing some knowledge and expertise today.
Yeah, I appreciate the invite.
So Jeff, why don't you tell everybody why they should listen to you today? Who are you? What's your background?
Sure. I've been in the financial planning business for about 20 years come January. It blows my mind to think that. It reminds me that I'm not a young buck anymore. But I started my career in public accounting and didn't really love it. It was okay, but I've always been real entrepreneurial and decided to kind of check this business out. That was 2001, and I started with a firm called Spectrum Financial Group, and I'm still affiliated with their broker dealer. And I've just enjoyed getting to know clients, helping them, start to save more and work towards goals. I've been in the business long enough now to be able to see, that come to fruition, which is really cool. That's my favorite part of the business, is when we can look back and we've got 10 or 20 years of history with somebody and, look at their original goals and be able to see the plan we put together for them and see that, you're more than on pace for all of those goals. And that's just a really cool part of my business. I really like that part of it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you mentioned, you're not a young buck anymore, but the whole point of this show and what you do is starting out as young as you can with your buck, right? Mm. Yep. You start out, the more you actually you see. So.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
But, so this show is about going from surviving to thriving in your household. And so today I really want to talk about finances with, with parents and one of the biggest stressors in a family is finances. And when do we start saving? How do we start saving? We feel like we can't save, especially when young parents are starting out. So we really want to give parents some tips of really how to take advantage of every single moment and really figuring out what their goals are so they can actually wake up 20 years from now and be very proud of what they started and where they're at now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of it is we talk about your why. Everybody's got, their why. A lot of couples have not sat down and had much of a detailed conversation about, what do we want the future to look like? I hear it all the time when I ask about, college goals or retirement goals. Yeah, we want to do that. We want to save for college. And which school? Do you want to do 4 years or 6 years? Do you want to help with 50% or 75%? Are they going to try to get scholarships? Retirement, there's a million different ways we can model that out. A lot of what we do is model stuff out, and we can look at taxes, inflation, and longevity and Social Security and everything, and customize what we do for, what their why is. But they don't even know a lot of times. And so retirement could be, I just want to play bocce ball all day, live in my trailer. And we've thought of that even, a travel trailer and stuff like that we've talked about. I mean, you see lots of different ways that you can retire. Yeah. Or it can be, I want a house in Colorado and I want one in Florida and I want to pay for grandkids college and all these other things. So, if we don't know the destination in detailed fashion, then it's really hard to answer that question. What do I need to be doing today? You nailed something real key though a second ago with saving. Almost every time we sit down with somebody and we do the math, and all this really is a big math problem once we know, the goal. But 9 times out of 10, they're not saving enough.
Yep.
And that's the biggest problem I think that we have. And I think as financial advisors, a lot of times we're too guilty of, the client typically comes to my office and spreads out the statements real quick. And what should I do? Can you invest better for me? And, that's it. I got to tell them on the front end, I'm happy to look at that, but can we take a step back? And I need to better understand where we're going, to better then ultimately be able to run all the math and the data and back into that answer. Yeah. If we don't know where we want to go, it's hard to know.
It's like, where's the finish line, number one? And at the same time, not only that, but when is the finish line? Because I can say I'm going to go run a marathon tomorrow. And I'm like, you're going to run a marathon? Yeah, it's going to take me 10 days, but I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. So when is that finish line as well? Because that's a big factor.
Mm-hmm. I'm hearing too, Jeff, is your job is a lot like mine. You have to sit back and listen a lot before you can even provide recommendations.
I have learned to ask the right questions. that's, you know, that's a lot of it. It's self-discovery, as you guys know in your business, you know, is really what it's about. And that's when ownership of something really takes hold, when it's their idea in a way, because, you know, we've just learned to listen and speak as little as possible, mm-hmm. but ask the right questions that I'm asking specific questions in a certain order, in a certain way, even, that are important to get them to figure out for themselves. Because if I tell them that it's not their idea, it's my idea. Right. But if instead I can use my experience and expertise to have them figure out for themselves, you know what? I don't have enough tax-free money for retirement. I've never thought about that. If instead I'd go at it, you know, just saying, well, you need to put your money here or there, that doesn't sound like, you know, it's not going to be as effective. So a lot of it is just listening and getting them to think through things they've probably never thought about before.
Well, and that's actually a huge question I was going to bring up, because I know for me personally, it's always been about trust. And if I don't understand something or can't see it completely, I don't really want to trust somebody to manage my money. It's a double-edged sword too, because you gotta kind of give up a little bit on some of that, because if you don't trust, you don't invest. The cost of not investing is going to way outweigh, or the risk of not investing is going to way outweigh, you know, the potential performance and what you need to do for long-term retirement, you know, needs and whatnot. But you mentioned the why earlier. So I wanted to mention something kind of funny with Dr. Swin and I. So, you know, when we talked about finances early on, even before marriage, you know, our why was, you know, she said, well, look, when it comes to finances, you're handling all that. I suck at it. I don't want to do anything. I don't want to know anything. Just give me the overview every now and then. But what I do want to know is that I want to be able to retire in this time, and you better make it happen. You know?
Yeah. And no pressure.
Clear.
Yeah, no pressure whatsoever. And so, you know, with couples, I think the thing they avoid most is, and we have it really, you know, we're really blessed. She trusts me 100%. She knows that I'm going to do everything what's best for our family. I'm not going to go spend money that I shouldn't be spending. I'm not going to be hiding money.
It's my job,
you know,
spend money.
It's her job. It's going to figure out how to make it happen. So so the trust is there with our relationship, and she doesn't want anything to do with it, and I'm going to handle all that. And if you really think about it, that's really how it is with most couples, I think you'd probably attest to. I mean, there's always going to be one person that's ultimately in charge of the finances. But they have to both be on the same page and have some goals in mind that you mentioned in order to really be in tune together, to know the big picture.
Yeah, it's really difficult to have one person that's really focused on that stuff, you know, on planning and saving, and somebody else that's just the exact opposite, as you know, for obvious reasons. It's like dragging an anchor. And we see it both ways. It's not always the wife or the husband. It's we see it all, but it's super common. And we got to get on the same page. And that's where I almost feel like I kind of step into y'all's role a little bit. And I tell them, let me be the intermediary. Let me be the bad guy. But if we can just get that other spouse that's not that interested, if we can get them talking a little bit, let me ask some of those questions, figure out their why. You know, a lot of times they want to continue a spending, you know, habit forever. And so we can talk through, okay, how do you do that? What do we need to do that? How much is that going to cost? If you want to live this kind of lifestyle and this is what it's looking like today, what's that going to be in 15, 20 years? And what else would you like to spend money on? You know, and kind of get them talking, and we quickly kind of back into, well, you know, in order for this to kind of stay like this long term for the next 50 years of my life, I am going to have to save some, or else it's, you know, it's, I really enjoy it for the next 10 or 15 years, but then I run out of money. Yeah. Or we got to work forever. And I don't like that picture. And they just haven't really thought, you know, that far down the road a lot of times.
And that's most Americans. They end up having to work forever and can never truly fully retire. There's always that concern of money in the back, you know, in the background. And another thing that I think parents don't think about, or people don't think about, is also the inflation piece of that. And how much money do I truly need for how long to sustain? Also the lifestyle of, we can talk about the lifestyle we want to sustain today, that may start 20 years from now, but as we start investing and start accumulating assets and we start, you know, earning more money and whatnot, you know, one thing that we all know as Americans, the more money we make, the more money we spend. And so our lifestyle costs go way up. And we have to also account for that as we continue to grow in our earnings and spending habits.
Yeah, I'm smiling because, it's a conversation we have, you know, almost daily. That I hear this one a lot where if I'm debt free, you know, and I've got, you know, $2 million in the bank, I should be good. I'm good because then I can get my 4%, you know, interest rate off of that I've heard is a safe withdrawal rate, which is debatable nowadays anyway. But, you know, $80,000 a year, that's great. Well, they're forgetting taxes, inflation, longevity, and healthcare costs. Those four things. And so when we model this stuff out, we see that early on in retirement, that person probably is fine. But, you know, they're eating into their principal a lot quicker than they think because of those factors. And then when you start to eat into principal, that graph that looked like this your whole life starts to go like that and it crashes quick. And you don't want to find that out when you've already retired. You know, you've gone out and burned all the bridges. And, you know, so you're exactly right. We need a lot more. People need a lot more money. And it's not, like I said, it's not me telling them that. I just kind of talk through it and say, how have you thought about inflation? Have you thought about healthcare costs and these? And, you know, then the math kind of speaks for itself, too, which I love the fact that we run a lot of data. And it's not my number. It's their number. Yeah. You know, we just model it out. But I hear that one a lot, that I really don't need that much money. But you need a lot more than you think.
Than you think, yeah.
And they've been living off of, you know, they're earning their highest income right before they retire. And so that person that, you know, has tripled their income in their working years, they never want to go and cut back 75% and just live the next 20, 30 years very minimally. That's just not human nature, you know. And so if you do that and you bank on that, the reality is, you know, it's probably not going to produce kind of lifestyle that you want. And at that point, you're stuck.
Yeah. You have to be extremely frugal throughout your entire lifespan of investing. Because one thing I know that even with us, I mean, just going to the grocery store, going to Sam's Club, doing these things that we do for our family, you know, we spend a lot more money than we need to. Mm-hmm. We waste a lot more than we should. And it drives me crazy. And she's like, well, I mean, we just don't have time to do this or do that, or, you know, life happens and whatnot. But, you know, I love these conversations because, you know, for my entire career, I was a credit expert. And so, you know, teaching really people how to utilize their credit in a creative and wise way as leverage in a lot of ways for individuals and business owners. But the financial piece is really the ultimate key as far as like getting to where we need to be at. So I want to jump back to trust really quick because there's a bunch of stigmas out there. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of advertisements. If you watch TV at all, you know, you can do all these things on your own. You're going to reduce your actual percentage costs as far as like what you invest. Well, I want to kind of break some of that down. So I know you probably hear all these things and you can probably tell the audience a lot more than I can, but mm-hmm. I know some of the things that are out there is like, well, my financial advisor, he just wants to make money off me. And so I don't think what people understand is that you can't really make money off somebody if you don't have any money. And if I'm making a bunch of money, then I'm doing my job. But what really is your cost to somebody to really help them with meeting their goals?
Good question. I think if you look at investments as a commodity, if they're all the same, then you want the cheapest thing. You and I like golf. I don't get to play enough, but I like to play. And if I'm going to go buy a TaylorMade driver, I want the cheapest TaylorMade driver I can get. It's a commodity. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. As long as it's the real deal, then I want the cheapest one. In the investment world, fees are extremely important. So is return and risk and tax management and knowing what to do and when. And those are the factors that, yes, you can probably save yourself about 1% a year by doing it yourself. If it's a commodity, then we should all be doing that. But the reality is it's not. You know, there's other factors involved with that. We're humans. A lot of people don't really understand the history of the market, the analytics that we look at. The reality is, and I figured this out early on in the business, being super analytical, I'm also a CPA, it's really about net return. There are managers out there that sometimes will use ETFs and something really inexpensive in the portfolio because it makes sense for this reason or that. Other times, we're using something that could be what you would look at as, oh my gosh, that's an expensive, you know, fund. Why would we do that? Well, net of that fee, if they're beating the cheap guy or gal, then it's, well, how many times can I pay that fee then? You know, and back to what you've said about, you know, what you hear on the radio, and there's a stat that you hear all the time. 3 out of 4 active money managers can't beat their relative index when you strip away their fees. But I love the fact that I think about that, and I think that's true. Plus or minus, it's true. It's not easy to do. But if you're telling me when you did this study that you found the other side of that ratio, what is that? Well, it sounds to me like you found that 1 out of 4 of them do. So could somebody that's a full-time money manager and advisor and that has a team of people and stuff, if you found it in the little study that you did, surely I can find it as a full-time job. Find those quarter that do consistently net of their fee beat their relative benchmark. So if it is possible, then that's really where we kind of come in. It ought to be an investment. If we're not helping you net of that fee get to a better place than you would on your own, then you should keep doing it. But they come in also for a lot of this is intangible too. They just don't, the numbers have gotten bigger. They've gotten older. The market's hitting all-time highs and they're just afraid of screwing the thing up. And a lot of times they're just like, the reality is I've heard this, I've heard that. Everybody's got an opinion. Should I be doing Bitcoin? Should I be doing gold? You know, should I do ETF? Should I do active management? It's not unlike anything else.
Yeah, what's the new thing out there now?
Google it. I like to tell people, give me an hour in a topic and I can find somebody that loves it and hates it.
Yeah.
And you'll say both of them is credible.
Yeah.
Back to the trust thing. If you can, whether it's, you know, financial advisor, you guys, doctor, lawyer, you got to find somebody that you can trust, which trust takes time. But meeting, you know, having somebody else that's worked with that advisor for a long time is huge. But trust is number one. And then competence is number two. Find somebody that is a certified financial planner that's been in the business a long time, maybe not too long, because then they might retire on you before you do. But I think those two things, if you can't get to a point with an advisor to at least have a goal of being able to say, I'm going to tell you my goals and you tell me what to do to get there. Just like you do your doctor. You know, here's my health goals. If we feel like we've got to go to WebMD and constantly, you know, research everything, then you're just going to chase your tail. And guess what information you're going to find about that prescription they just gave you? All the bad stuff, you know? Yep. And then you're going to go back and the doctor's like, I have a lot of doctor clients. And they said, yeah, you know, the WebMD thing is, it's nice. It's informational. Your diagnosis is in there somewhere. But when the patient comes in with that printed out, they're like, I already know I'm behind the eight ball because, you know, they've already got a physician and it's somebody that they've Googled or found through WebMD or whatever. And when you got multiple different quarterbacks, it's really difficult for any one of them to come up with a game plan and implement it and get you there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I want to throw something out there because as my psychologist brain is listening to this and our parents out there listening, I know that for a lot of people, and I hope you have, you know, experience with this. A lot of people won't go near a financial advisor because they're embarrassed or they're afraid of being judged. Mm-hmm. And so we're talking about going to someone that you can trust and here are the signs of how you know you can trust them. But what about how you approach making people feel comfortable and non-judged for how silly they may feel because they don't understand numbers?
Yeah, and I think really quick, I want to just jump back to what Jeff was saying, though, because, you know, I've got lots of clients in the consulting business and different experiences. And one thing that I think people don't really sit back and really truly understand is that how much time do we have available each day to do the things that we want to do? Mm-hmm. We can all be a financial expert if we spent the time and the education and research on that. Is it worth that extra percent that you may save? Is it really? Probably not. And thinking about the stresses of seeing things going on back and forth and, oh my gosh, this week got crazy and then little Johnny happened. This happened to little Johnny. Little Susie's doing this now. And all of a sudden, we are so far out of the financial world, not seeing what's going on with our portfolio, and we're the one managing it. Mm-hmm. And that can be a scary thing. So, I mean, if you think about just the fact that you take away all the stress, all the fear. And I know that if I call you up, you're going to return my phone call. I know that if I have a question, you're going to have some answers. And you're going to also say objectively, look, we can do this. We can also do this. You're going to give me options. So it's always about someone that really knows the market, not just from their own portfolio, their own experience, but managing dozens or hundreds of other portfolios, seeing so many different portfolios based on people wanting different portfolios, and ultimately getting to see the best of the best and what's performing, what's not performing.
Yeah, that's, yeah, it's not just about investing. What we do, I mean, I think a lot of people, when you hear financial advisor, you think broker. You think they're going to help me invest my money. Yes, I mean, everybody does that. We all manage assets, and we can broker insurance and college planning and IRAs and all that stuff, but it's so much more than that. You know, the best relationships that we have and the most success we have with a client is when they see me as the quarterback, and I tell them that. You know, I just say, it, back to kind of your question too, I said, no questions off the table. We're going to talk about fees. We're going to talk about, you know, good things that have worked for you, bad things that have, you know, any question you've got. If you've got a question, I've heard it. And other people have the same question. But it's, we have to get to a point where we can have open conversations and an open mind. And I tell people, back to the quarterback, you know, if you're thinking about refinancing, or I got this thing in the mail, or, you know, is, should I do this? Should I do that? I'm thinking about doing Airbnb. I think about, let's talk about it. You know, it doesn't, we want to be the quarterback and the coach. And sometimes I got to tell the client, that's a great question. Like we did walking down the hall, you know, a while ago, sometimes you got to bring in a real estate expert. But let's talk about anything that has, you know, finances in it. And let me help you either answer the question directly or bring in somebody else, like an attorney or like an accountant, and let's get on the same page. And when we can do that and kind of build a team, then we can, you know, all work together to figure out, okay, this is the goal. A lot of times those other advisors don't really know the goal. You know, the accountant's never met the attorney, he's never met the mortgage broker, you know, realtor, and nobody really kind of knows the goal. And so if we can help them build that team, and everybody get focused on a common goal, wow, the efficiencies that we can have for that, you know, with that, are huge, because decisions we make in one area can look good here, but throw off something else. An investment decision throws off your taxes. So we got to kind of get all on the same page and focused on the goal. A lot of what we do, when people ask me, how are you different? We like to say, I like to take it from transaction oriented to goal oriented. You know, everybody's got a lot of stuff and you got pieces of the puzzle, but nobody's really helped them create that box top. And some clients, we may never get to that point. They're like, okay, yeah, that's great, but can't you just help me with this account over here? Yes, we can. I mean, we can do that. But ideally, before you get to retirement, we want to help you create that box top, you know, to figure out how all these pieces can really fit together to get you there, you know, quicker.
Yeah, you know, and the cool thing about having a professional like you, building that relationship, you have all kinds of other relationships with other clients from different backgrounds, different goals. And so you also get to hear more things that we may not think of. And you actually, because you are sitting down with so many people, so many different goals and ideas and thoughts, you can bring a lot more to the table than the things we can think of on ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned an attorney as part of the team. It's kind of funny. So when I was in my consulting business, I had an attorney that came to me, and a young attorney, and he wanted to go out. He just got fully licensed, and he wanted to go out, and he wanted this brand new Mercedes Cabriolet. And so he'd found one locally at a dealership, but he'd, you know, he had a lease worked out and everything on that vehicle. And he came to me, and he says, hey, man, I'm looking for this vehicle. I was like, yeah, I can find that vehicle for you. So I found it the same day within 3 hours with one of my brokers and found a lease deal for him that saved him $150 a month. Okay. Same car, same exact features. In fact, it actually was the same car. I was able to buy it better than he was. So it was actually the same car, the same dealership, just to be honest. And the lease was actually a better lease deal, saving $150 a month on the same term, same everything, same mileage. Mm-hmm. Everything was the same. Mm-hmm. And when he came in to pick the car up, he actually looked at the actual lease agreement, and part of that was the facilitator fee, which is really the profit for the company. You know, and a portion of that's my my commission. And he saw that. He's like, "Whoa, you guys are bringing that in?" I'm like, "Yeah. What's wrong with that?" He's like, "No, I'm not paying that kind of profit to you guys." I'm like, "Well, you don't have to. You don't have to buy the car." Mm-hmm. He's like, "But I mean, I want to just buy it back from them. But you bought the car from them, same dealership." I'm like, but the bottom line is you're going to pay more money there. Mm. You know, it doesn't matter. Why does it matter what we make if we're providing a better service and a better deal for you? And people just don't understand that sometimes. Sometimes the cost is, again, I mean, if you can charge me $1 million to profit me $10 million, how many times can I sign up, you know?
Right. Now that's a forest for the trees, right?
So he didn't buy the car? You couldn't talk him into it?
Oh, no. After I went through all that with him, okay. he definitely took the car because, again, why would you not? I mean, you're saving $150 a month. Mm. So Dr. Swain brought up some points about the embarrassment and whatnot, one thing that I think we do as individuals is we don't start investing. We don't have the money right now. We're new in our careers, or we just started a family, or we may be, you know, kids that are in high school and we got all these expenses, and we never have the money to invest, right?
Right.
And so sometimes we're also embarrassed to bring that, you know, to our financial advisor, or even seek out a financial advisor. Like, he doesn't want to work with me. I mean, I only got $100 a month, you know, that I can start. Mm-hmm. And what people don't really understand is that, you know, we really don't, number one, we don't miss the money we don't see. So if we start taking money out of our paycheck right away, mm-hmm. even if it's you taking it out so I don't see it in my paycheck, we don't miss the money we don't see. And if we do see it, we're probably going to spend it. Mm-hmm. But let's speak to the part about, you know, I don't make enough, I can't invest enough. Why would you want to work with me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a common theme that we get all the time. It's almost like having kids. People want to wait till everything's kind of perfect until you, you know, have kids, and you know that's just never going to happen. And so back to the psychology of what we do. There are plenty of money managers out there that if you don't have a lot of money, they're you know, you're not going to be a client until you do. But what I tell people is I'm less concerned on the front end about the dollars. I'm more concerned with creating the structure and the plan and getting you something in place that you can get excited about. Because then we build the car, you know, then, you know, it doesn't, maybe it's not the car that's going to get us there in its own right just yet. But my job as the advisor is to help people save more and put more fuel in the tank. And you nailed it, that it's kind of like a new car payment. You know, you feel stuff like that for a month or two, and then you get used to it and you find a way to live around it. And so the psychology of creating an automated savings plan, and we might have $500 a month and 50's going here and 100's going here, and you know, we create that structure, somebody can get excited about it. And then when you get something paid off or you get a raise, you get a bonus, then, you know, you start to kind of reprioritize instead of just, you know, coming. Sometimes it happens as people come to us and now they've got the crumbs. They're like, here, you know, get me there. And so I still will help them, you know, create this plan because I know down the road I can get them excited about that. And then we can start putting more fuel in the tank. But where the magic happens is that if we can get to a point, which may take years sometimes, to where they're now on pace for their college and their retirement goals and everything, guess what you can do with the rest?
Whatever you want.
We don't care. You can throw in the garbage. You can go, you can do whatever. You give it. You can be,
you know, you can donate. You can start that business you wanted to always do that just never had the chance to do that.
Right.
You know, and what's cool about like saving, and I tell our kids this, and we'll talk more about this on another episode that we'll do with children. But when you start seeing that money grow and compile and whatnot, the more and more you see it grow, the more excited you get, and the more you start being more conscious about really what am I spending? I want to save more. I don't want to spend. So, you know, I tell my kids all the time, like they get their allowance and they want to go and buy something. I'm like, do you really want to buy that? Or do you want to save a little bit more and buy something better? Mm-hmm. And they always say, yeah, you know, that makes sense. I want to buy something better. So when we see that money growing, do I really want to go buy that, you know, that new dress or that pair of shoes, mm-hmm. that new handbag or whatnot? I see that money growing. So it's always in the back of your mind. So you're talking about psychology. You know, there is psychology behind savings and really what it does to our spending habits and how it changes our focus on really achieving our goals. But the bottom line is that most of us, as you mentioned earlier on in the show, is that we don't even have those goals. And that's the big problem. When we fail to plan, we plan to fail, mm-hmm. and then we always end up being a failure.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And teaching them how the compounding, you know, works and seeing that. You know, the longer we let it do its thing, you know, you're earning interest on interest and, you know, this dollar can become that dollar, you know, for every year that you let it continue to do its thing. And so, yeah, just education is a lot of what we do, teaching people how this stuff works.
Yeah. And so now that you mentioned that really quick too,
I was just going to add, you know, with compounding, it's like money does grow on trees.
Dr. Swayla loves when money grows on trees. She still believes it grows on trees. I must be the money tree. I don't know what that means, but
that's
but you know, the cool thing, you know, that people don't really also understand is like there's different buckets for investing. There's the tax-free bucket. There's the tax-deferred bucket, and then there's the
taxable bucket,
right? So, but before we jump into those, I want you to touch base on those because what there's a lot of clients out there that they're so focused on their mortgage. I want to pay my mortgage off. They get this auto loan. I want to pay my auto loan off. Dave Ramsey is a big, advocate for being completely debt-free. And so everyone out there, Dave Ramsey mindset, I want to pay everything off 100%,
right.
No debt whatsoever. My dad is just like that too. He's on me all the time. When are you gonna pay your car off? Dad, I got 0.9% for 84 months.
Yeah.
I'm never paying it off. It's free money. My mortgage rate, right now you got rates in the twos and threes. Why would I ever pay that mortgage off? There's tax deductions and benefits for that mortgage. And I can probably go and invest that somewhere very safely at compounded interest, where the mortgage rate is actually simple interest loan, and let my money work for itself. I mean, we work so hard for our money. We want our money. I want my money to work for me. So tell me how to make my money work for me, and tell me about these different buckets. Because some of the things also about investing that I didn't even really understand for a long time, and you bring it more to light, even more so, even with my background, is that some of these buckets, though we may take out $200 to invest, the tax savings on that can also maybe even offset that 100% or to some percentage. So I may be taking out $200, but it's only cost me $50.
Yeah, two big topics there, leverage and tax strategies.
There you go.
So let's start with leverage. That's using debt to, take a dollar. If it's going to cost me 2 or 3% over here, if I can earn more than 2 or 3% over here, then that's called leverage, and we've got an arbitrage there, and that person gets to their goals quicker if that comes to fruition. Think back to Dave Ramsey. Part of this is keeping in mind who the audience is. A lot of times the audience in that format, they're in a really bad way. They have proven that they're not good at taking that and investing it, and they're spending it, and they're way down the wrong road. The income a lot of times maybe isn't super high, and they're spending everything that they've got, and they don't have the ability to, or maybe the desire to leverage that. And so they got to be shaken up.
Yeah.
You need to
downsize
your house.
There's good credit and bad credit and things like that.
So let me ask you a question. If a client like that comes to you, the one that typically would follow Dave Ramsey, but they come to you instead, what are you going to tell them?
I think I agree with the vast majority of the things.
I mean, Dave Ramsey teaches great things.
Yeah, I think he does, but he's trying to
What I'm trying to illustrate is that even that client can come see someone like you.
Absolutely.
Right? There's all different kinds of clients can absolutely benefit from talking to someone like you.
Yeah, and we're going to give that client the same advice as Dave is, that 28% on a credit card needs to be your life enemy. I mean, that is just...
First thing you conquer.
Right. The other thing is there's financial answers to things. There's feel good answers to things. The financial answer is exactly what you just said. Why would I pay off anything that's costing me like next to nothing? But the feel good answer is sometimes, my job is to help understand them in every way that I can, but give them ultimately the financial answer that works best in their situation. I may give somebody that's 22 a different, piece of advice on the mortgage than somebody that's 65, because I'm a big believer in having no debt for retirement. That's awesome. But do I want to really tackle something? The numbers are super clear that if you're like, I'm going to make, even if I'm not in credit card debt, I'm going to make my mortgage now enemy number two. And I'm going to have that thing paid off by 45 or 50 or whatever. But we've all seen the compounding thing, and if you run those numbers and say, okay, well, I don't save anything and except for my mortgage until I'm 45 years old, that person will never catch the other person that started investing and has been compounding for 15 years or whatever. The math is super clear. As long as your return, which is never guaranteed, but if it's more than the 2 or 3 or 3.5% mortgage that I've got, the math is super clear.
And historically long-term, it's always been well above that. And that's what the young buck starting early, putting money in consistently each and every week, month, year, over a long period of time. If you're looking for a quick fix, it ain't going to happen. But to the client, the Dave Ramsey client that has a lot of debt, those clients, they don't know how to manage their money at all. And that's really where Dave steps in, and he really helps people learn how to manage their money, get out of debt, change their spending habits, change their lifestyle, because that's a lifestyle thing, right? But even those clients with that lifestyle concern, debt issues, high interest rate debt and whatnot, those can still be a great client for you. Those are clients you can actually, because you've got all kinds of great calculators too that can really show them the way, help them create the goal that they may not be able to create themselves. Even with the Dave Ramsey and education and all that stuff, everyone needs a goal. So someone like you can show them like, well, here's really where you're at. here's all your credit card debt. Bring it to me. Let's put it together. We'll put it into a calculator for you. We've got a program for that. Let's see which one we want to conquer.
It's not just a TI-85.
Yeah. It's not just a TI-85.
TI-2+.
You know, and let's create a big, and that's what I used to do with clients.
Sounds so fancy.
You know, that's what I used to do in my consulting business is show clients, teach them what debts to start out with, which ones you want to start conquering, that feel-good feeling. You know, let's start with the smaller one, knock that off. Oh, that feels good, right. You know, and yeah, just different
you got
things.
Different opinions there, too. You got Susie Orman says one thing and Dave says the other.